Today's reading is from Genesis chapter 41, verses 46 through 49 and 53 through 57. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all of the land of Egypt. During the seven plenteous years of earth produced abundantly, he gathered up all of the food of the 7 years when there was plenty in the land of Egypt and stored up food in the cities. He stored up in every city the food from the fields around it. So Joseph stored up grain in such abundance, like the sand of the sea, that he stopped measuring it. It was beyond measure. The 7 years of plenty that prevailed in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in every country, but throughout the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says, you do." And since the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the world came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine became severe throughout the world. The word of God for the people of God.
I just love the facial expressions were like slightly exaggerated, but also in my heart. So it was as real as it could be. Well, my name is Mindy Moore, and I'm the campus pastor here at St. Luke's Midtown. I'm so glad to see all of you this morning. My family and I were away last week on vacation, so it's good to be back with you. And if it's your first time here, I'm glad to meet you on this Sunday morning. We are in our series. This is a heavily themed worship series, okay, my friends, but it is Life is a Roller Coaster, and we're looking at how our faith intersects with the ups and downs of our lives. Now, so far, we've looked at what it's like when you kind of buckle up and get ready to go on the ride. Amy actually preached that first week of our series and talked about what it's like to trust God when you feel like you don't have any control. I'm still thinking about that. I'm still learning that lesson myself. The next week, we looked at the climb, which I told you is my least favorite part of a roller coaster. When we're in those moments where we're struggling, we're trying to figure out, how am I going to get through this? How long will this last? And today, we're looking at the drop. Now, for a lot of people, this is the most exciting part of a roller coaster, because this is when the action starts, right? You go down the hill. You might go back up the hill. You might have some twists and turns. You might find yourself upside down. But the drop is the place where things get really exciting. Now, I want to tell you about a time long ago, before YouTube. Can you think back? Think back into the past when you didn't really know what a roller coaster was going to do. There was a real element of surprise to what would happen on a roller coaster. Really, all you could do was stand in line for like an hour and a half and play games in line and watch the roller coaster and try to get glimpses of what was going to happen. You know, you could see kind of people's faces on certain parts. You could kind of see, okay, well, maybe there's a loop after this drop and maybe that happens. But the whole thing had this element of mystery to it. Well, now it's today, and the mystery is gone. You can pretty much find a POV video of any ride at any theme park. I don't know, have any of you watched POV videos of roller coasters? I watched a couple, and now my algorithm, I get them daily. So now I watch a lot of these because they're just there. But when my family and I went to Disney this past January, we watched a lot of these point of view videos because as a parent, I was trying to make sure my kids would ride the rides with me and not get afraid when we got to the front. So we would watch all of these videos together, especially the ones that were like the more intense rides. We watched those a few times. And I realized once we got to that place where we were in line, it was super helpful. Because if we had a ride where one of my kids was getting a little nervous and they're like, I don't know if I want to do this ride, we would just say, hey, remember, we watched the video. We know what's going to happen. We know it's going to be okay. And so point of view videos are great for a theme park. They are not so helpful for our real life roller coasters. Unfortunately, there isn't really a resource out there for us that can show us when the drops are going to happen. There's not a resource out there that can say, hey, at this moment in your life, you're going to find yourself doing this repeatedly and you're not going to know which way is up. We don't have that kind of way to predict what life is going to bring us. And when we look at this story of Joseph in the Bible, it's a great illustration of just how extreme some of these ups and downs, climbs and drops, just how extreme these things can be. I actually think when I look at Joseph's life, the majority of his life feels like a pretty intense roller coaster. If you're not super familiar with the story of Joseph, it's found in the book of Genesis. So it's found in the very beginning of the Bible. And I just need you to know, Joseph gets about 30% of the book of Genesis. So the people really wanted to pass down Joseph's story. There was something about it that was really important about the events of his life and about the way that God worked in it. So you've got this big chunk of Genesis talking about Joseph. And for Joseph, from the very beginning, you've got this up and down. See, when Joseph's born, it's a pretty big high note. I mean, he is his father's favorite child. He's from his father's favorite wife. We could unpack that. That's a different sermon, my friends. But you can guess his brothers don't really like that. They don't really like that he's the golden child in the family. And so you go from this high point to a pretty low when his brothers sell Joseph into servitude. And then they go back and say, hey, Dad, Joseph's dead. I mean, low. So there's Joseph. Well, then he ends up on another high because he's this esteemed servant in a household, a very wealthy, important household. But then back to the bottom because he's accused of a crime he doesn't commit and he gets thrown in jail. Joseph actually stays in that low point for quite some time until we find him where we found him today. And he's the number two in charge in Egypt. I mean, he's got more prestige and power than most people would ever dream of. So life is very much a roller coaster for Joseph. And I think it's an important thing to pay attention to for us. Because I think what this does is it helps us let go of a misconception that a lot of us have about what our lives are going to do. Now, this was not a misconception that I was super aware of until I was part of a project that St. Luke's did with the Fuller Youth Institute. And we saw some research that Fuller had done on people's perceptions of how they expect their lives to go and how their lives actually function. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. So the Fuller Youth Institute did this huge study with people from all over the country, from people from all different faith traditions. It was a very diverse sample size. And they asked them one question to start. They said, how do you expect your life to go? How much stability do you expect your life to have? And overwhelmingly, in this very diverse sample size, people described their lives as they expected them to look like this. So you can see there's a lot of flat, stable line, with just a couple little bumps in the road. People expected that their lives would be mostly stable. I have some bad news for you, friends. They then asked them a follow-up question, and they said, okay, tell us about your lives. And when they described the events of their lives, it looked a lot more like this. It's kind of a hot mess. But what they found as they did this research was that overwhelmingly, people expected their lives to be mostly stable with like little ups and downs here and there, that those things might pop up from time to time. But when they actually talked about their life events and what really happens, they found that most of life isn't stable at all. Most of life is the hills and valleys. Most of our life is twists and turns and things that we don't expect. And so when I heard this research, I thought, well, that is very interesting because I have been told, maybe you've been told too, that my goal in life should be to get to this. It should be to have a stable, safe, predictable life. But if that's not what life really looks like for most of us, then I think maybe we're chasing something that's really hard to attain. Maybe we're chasing something that doesn't happen that often. And maybe if life looks more like this than like this, maybe instead of chasing stability, we should focus on chasing connection with God to see us through the ups and the downs. That's a huge part of what we learn from Joseph in this story. And I'm going to tell you, as we look at Joseph's story in this narrative, when we first zoom in on this chapter that Avery read for us, I mean, Joseph is living a good life, okay? He's got the great job. The economy is doing awesome. I mean, the food is plentiful. The drinks are flowing. I read through this and I thought, I bet interest rates were low when Joseph, during these 7 years, like, it's the good life. Things are awesome. But they don't stay that way. And so we move from 7 years of plenty and abundance to these really hard 7 years of famine. And in these 7 years of famine, you've got people who are literally starving. That is not for dramatic effect. That is the actual situation that they're going through. And so it's a bad time no matter who you are or where you look. And the thing with Joseph's story is that it would be really easy to expect this story to just spiral into doom and gloom. Like, that's how we would expect it to end. But what I love about the story is that's not how it ends at all. This story actually ends with hope. This story ends with God intervening and helping people. And the way that God works is through the things that Joseph did when they were in those 7 years of plenty. The text tells us that when the grain was growing, Joseph was busy storing it. I mean, this is not a story about someone who like gets a windfall and says, yes, I can't wait to see how I can spend this money as quick as possible. Like, Joseph is seeing what's going on. He's saying, I have a responsibility here. I've got to take care of these people. I've got to make plans for the future. I've got to be prepared in case our collective luck runs out. And when I look at what Joseph does here, I think it's really important that we understand this is not just a savvy business decision. I mean, I'd assume Joseph in his position, he probably is a good business person. He probably has a head for that kind of thing, but that's not at the core what this is. For Joseph, this is an act of faith. And I would say it's actually a radical act of faith to stay connected to God when we're in the high points of life. You know, we can see how hard it can be to do this all the time. How often do we hear stories about people who are up here? They are having the time of their life, they're hitting out of the park, and then they have the fall. I mean, we hear about it. We hear about the celebrity that does the thing, and now it's all over the news. We see the megachurch pastor with like a million followers on Instagram, and that scandal comes to light. We see the politician in the height of their career, and then it's just over. I think we see this story again and again because I'm not sure we're actually given the tools to navigate success very well. I'm not sure the church really looks at that and says, what do you do with your faith when you're kind of at the pinnacle of your success? How do you remember when things are going well that you need God or that you have any needs at all? I think that's why the practices we cultivate when we're in those high points of life, I think that's why they're so critical. Because it's those practices that set us up for once we reach those lows. Because again, we're all going to have them. I mean, that's not something we can avoid. It's inevitable for us. We're all going to have highs and lows. And the practices that Joseph creates when he's in those high points of life, that's what it does. It sustains him. It sustains the people when everything falls apart. And this habit of storing grain, it doesn't just save the people, but it points Joseph's attention back to God. It reminds him that, okay, I'm in this moment of plenty. I'm in this moment of success, and it's not about me. I'm not the reason this is happening. I'm experiencing something that's bigger than me, and I need to pay attention to that. And I think as Joseph does that, as he pays attention, it helps him depend on God in a really unique way. You know, what Joseph does in the 7 years of plenty, I think it gives us a really good blueprint for what we can cultivate when we're in those high points of life. He gives us a good blueprint for spiritual practice, and I want to share it with you this morning. So what Joseph does is I think he does three things. First of all, he notices what's true. He finds the thing to be grateful for. And then he allows himself to depend on God. So I want to walk you through what this could look like in your real life, because I'm guessing here in Broad Ripple in Indianapolis, many of you are not storing up grain. Am I right? Yes? Maybe you are, and we can talk later. But this Joseph story is a little bit out of our context. So I was like, what does this mean if you're us right here, right now? How can we do these three things? So Avery, I'm going to invite you to leave that on the screen for just a minute while I walk through. Just give me, thanks for the thumbs up. That was great. And I want to give you an example of when I practiced this week and what this could look like maybe in your life. So if you read the St. Luke's email called Revelations, it goes out every Friday. Normally when Pastor Rob is here and not on sabbatical, he writes the devotion, but I got to write the devotion this week. And so what I wrote about was a walk that my family took down Flower Alley. Does anyone know what Flower Alley is? Okay, a few of you. Here, I'm going to introduce a new place to some of you. So Flower Alley, it's just right down there. It's so close. And it's this two-block stretch of alleyway where neighbors have painted or had painted on their garages these amazing murals of flowers and plants. And they created this space in this alley where you can just, like, go and hang out. Like, it's not weird if you spend time lurking behind these people's garages. They want you to do that. And so I just love it. It's, like, my favorite place in this entire neighborhood because it's all about beauty and community and just what happens when neighbors come together. And so we set out on our walk earlier this week, and I thought, this is a good chance to practice what I'm about to preach about on Sunday. So here's how I did these three things as we went on this walk. First of all, I noticed what was true. So the facts of this situation. We live in a walkable community that cares about beauty and cares about people. Those are the facts. Find the thing to be grateful for. Well, I found several things to be grateful for. I was grateful for the art around me. I was also grateful for the benches that people have put out again, so it's not creepy for you to just hang out behind their garages. I was thankful for the little bucket of tennis balls so my dog could have a free ball and be entertained by something other than trying to chase the rabbits that she saw on our walk. You know, all of these things I felt grateful for. And the final thing, allowing myself to depend on God. So for me, this kind of looked like a prayer in that moment. And I pray, God, I want to be as aware as possible of the things around me. I want to move at a pace where I don't miss this. You know, I drive past that alley every single day, at least once, normally twice. It doesn't hit the same as when I'm on my way to work or trying to take a kid to an activity. So I said, God, let me move in a way where I don't miss this. where I have time to appreciate what you're doing, where I have time to appreciate the way the people in my neighborhood love each other and love this place. You know, in some ways, I think this sounds really simple. Like, I guess this isn't changing the world or like doing anything really dramatic. But I just wonder if we practiced something like this regularly, what it would do to us, how it would change our perspective, how it would connect us to God so that when the things that we know and believe in, when they all start to fall apart or get shaky or you feel like you're kind of in the free fall, in the drop, how could this bring us back to what we know and who we know and what we believe God to be? So I just want to invite you this week. Maybe you try that. Maybe you do it every day, maybe like three times, whatever works for you. But see what asking yourselves these questions and trying to anchor yourself in this way, see what that does to connect you to this God who loves you, even when things fall apart. Because see, if we go back to Joseph's story, things were falling apart. I mean, that's the bottom line. When they're in these 7 years of famine, things feel like they are just out of control. They're unlivable. It's unreal. And I think especially as we read this story of Joseph in our world today, it's so important that we understand this was not just a low point for Joseph. This was a low point for everyone. I mean, this was a crisis that was impacting so many people. This is the story of a nation. This is a story of people looking around themselves thinking, I don't know how we got here. I don't know what we're supposed to do with this reality. And maybe the question that they were holding is, I don't know if this can actually be fixed. I was really sitting with those questions as I prepared this week and I read this text because I thought for Joseph in this moment, they're in a moment of collective crisis. I mean, the text says the whole world came to Egypt. And I'm like, okay, well, we know your view of the whole world is a little more narrow when this was written, but the point stands. I mean, this is a diverse group of people saying we need help. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. And all of these people, as they experience their absolute lowest moment, it's in that moment that God makes a way. You know, I think it's hard to believe sometimes that God's going to make a way. Because fear can be a pretty loud voice, especially when it's a collective fear. And I just think we're going into a season as people, especially as we go into this upcoming election, fear is loud. And I think that's true no matter who you are. I think that's true no matter who you vote for or what you believe. Fear is driving the way that we receive information, the way we act on information. I just see it more and more. I think we're in this moment that I would just call a macro moment of chaos in our country. And I just want you to know that I feel that. Like, if you're walking into this place feeling that, you're not alone. You're not alone. And we're going to hold that together over these next several months. But as heavy as it feels, I do believe that God creates hope. I really do, because I see it in stories like Joseph's. I see it in the way that God moves through the faithful actions of people. I believe that God can create hope through the faithful actions that we do here and now. And I think it ties back, as we think about how do we act, what do we do? I think it ties back into those practices that we create. I read something this week that I wanted to share with you. Caitlin Scheiss, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's the author of a book called The Liturgy of Politics, Spiritual Formation for the Sake of Our Neighbors. She's also the author of a book called Faith in the Ballot Box. She's just a voice I really respect where we look at theology and politics. And she shared this the other day. It really spoke to me, and I just hope that there's a word in here that might resonate with you as well. She said, "The next few months have the potential to warp us, making us angry and fearful, suspicious of our neighbors, ready to snap at the slightest offense. I felt it in myself. She said the red light at an intersection lasted a little too long yesterday, and after a week of tense conversations and internet criticism and scary news cycles, I thought I would burst. We need to spend time now thinking about what practices of prayer, what habits of rest, what limits on media consumption, what strong relationships could help us weather this season. Because when it's over, regardless of the outcome, we will still have problems to face. We will have neighbors who need our love and service. We will have communities who need strong advocates. We will have churches who need Sunday school teachers and casserole bakers and front lawn mowers. How we choose to navigate this season now will affect how faithful we will be then. You know, we don't get to choose the ups and downs of our lives. We don't get to choose how this is going to play out. We don't get to choose when it happens or how it happens, whether it's personal or collective or any of that. We don't get to choose that. But what we get to do is choose to build a foundation of being connected to this God in a way that transforms us for the long haul. We can choose to cultivate a life of faith that sustains us through the hardest moments. We can let ourselves be shaped by wisdom and compassion and hope to create things that look like God would want them to look. We can take a long view and know that whether we are at the highest high or the lowest low, there's not a single place we can go that God's love can't find us. Because look, even when life does this, even when we're in the drop, even when we feel out of control, stories like Joseph's remind us that God is faithful through it all. And I think stories like Joseph's remind us that creating this life that's connected to God, that's work that's worth doing. Let's pray together. God, sometimes we feel like we are in a place where we don't have a lot of control, where we don't know what the next drop or turn will bring, where we're not even sure what it means to reach a point where hope comes back into the story. But God, what we know is that you go with us. God, we know you are faithful. God, we know that you work in ways that help us walk in step with you. And so, God, as we are in this moment, whether we're at a place where we feel like we're at the highest high point or we feel like we're at the lowest low, would you help us be connected to you? And would you work through us? Help us be open to the way that your Spirit is moving, and let us move with you. Amen.